Tired of jumping from job to job? How about a career in a recession-proof industry where you can make a difference and help create a healthier living and working environment? The pest management industry gives you the opportunity to work with more independence. OPC Pest Services will give you a chance to grow with advancement. Come be a part of our team at OPC Pest Services. Apply online at opcpest.com/careers. That's opcpest.com/careers.
Where do you go to find all your favorite wine, beer, and spirits with selections customized to local tastes? For over 25 years, that go-to place has been Cox's Spirit Shop. Cox's, Louisville's go-to liquor store.
Be a part of the show. Text Bobby V on the UPS Jobs text line at 437-9680.
Dad, Pops, Dad, hey, Pops, Dad.
What?
Dad, guess what?
What?
Pops, the bear is back today.
Oh. That's appropriate. I won the bear cup.
So. There you go. The whole season released today. If anyone's watched it yet, let me know if it's any good.
No, you just got to watch it.
No, I know.
What are we on? Season 3?
Yeah, we're on season 3.
Yeah.
I mean, the
last two seasons, I don't care what anyone's review is. I will watch it.
It's fantastic. So have you not watched it yet?
No, Seven Fishes, best episode of all time.
Oh, yeah. Seven Fishes, terrific. I don't know, Forks. Forks makes me cry.
Oh, yeah, Forks is good.
Forks makes me cry.
I think the acting alone, or with the, I always forget his name, but it uses Sal Goodman, John Mulaney. Just as extras, like the
John Bernthal.
They're part of the family. Awesome, and then the brothers.
I haven't seen it in so long. I probably should watch the last two or three episodes.
Just get reacclimated. Yeah,
like what I remember John Mulaney being in it. What did he do?
He's the significant other to their cousin.
Yeah,
and he's in the episode The Seven Fishes, the really stressful episode. They have the really stressful night of the Seven Fishes and everything. He's there and he does the prayer and kind of.
Dude, he has the best prayer. Like, thank you guys for accepting me into this family, even though the majority of you guys think I'm gay. And then he's like, but I really appreciate.
He plays that in his act too. It's funny.
Yeah,
he's always talking about.
Big fan of John Mulaney. John Mulaney is very good.
All right, texts come in and say, here's some suggestions for your string of adjectives for. Waffle House. Pasted, wasted, grated, tasted, and basted.
That's pretty good.
That's a good one. This one says Rock Chalk Jayhawked. Okay, well, that would be for a Kansas fan, but that's only three. Texter says, whole lot of beaver talk today. Yep, about Buc-ee's.
A lot of beaver talk.
Texter says, hate to say it, Bob, but you might be on the non-invitee list. Looks like they've cashed it in and looking to chill. Well, maybe. I don't know. It's not why it was created. I mean, it is, but it's not.
Tanner, you can call Uncle Paulie now, he said.
I would kick Bob out of the group. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate that.
Nice. Always nice to be supported. they announced the Fred Cowgill thing. Tim Sullivan wrote about it. Veteran local newscaster Fred Cowgill's retirement barely lasted a month. He's going to be in charge of a TV radio program at Jeffersonville High School.
Oh, really?
Oh, you didn't know that?
I did not know that. I knew he had something in the works. I didn't know that's what it was.
Yep.
So good for good for Uncle Freddie.
Texas says, Bob, how was Putt Shack? Signed, U.S. Open contest winner who said hello Saturday. I got to be honest with you. This may sound like heresy after all the battling that we did to get it.
No.
I don't love Top Golf. I don't.
Really?
But Putt Shack is pretty, pretty cool.
Nice.
I don't know. It's just Topgolf is a driving range that they gussied up, and they make it fun so that people who don't play golf can hit a ground ball into the big hole and score points.
Yeah.
So I said, well, what is Putt Shack? It's going to be the same thing. Miniature golf is fine by me. I like the serious miniature golf. I'll play the putt-putt, the three courses, every hole's a par two.
Right.
This is anything but that. It's very expensive. But it's unbelievable the technology it goes in. Give you an example. If you and I play in the same hole, and I take two strokes to finish the hole, and you take three, the balls have sensors in them. They'll keep your score for you, and I'll get 100 points. Let's say If I took two, I'd get 100 points. You'd get like 50 points. But in playing the hole, you can get points. Like, for example, there's this one hole where you got to put the ball up a big ramp, and at the top is a hole bigger than a regular golf
hole. Right, okay.
And it, all of the levels, it's going to be one of those two-level holes. You know, yeah. The ball's going to filter down to the bottom.
Right.
Regular putt-putt has that, too. If you get in the middle hole, it gets close to the hole or goes in.
Right.
Or you get to the side ones, you'll be down in the lower level, but right. A long way away.
And you're allowed to test which one is better before.
Yeah, well, this is, that's not, you're not going to have to do that with this, because if you go up to the top, you'll get. I'm making numbers up. You'll get 100 points.
Mm-hmm.
If you rolls off the ramp and goes over the side, it'll go down to the bottom, but you'll only get 60 points. And then if you only go about a third of the way up the ramp and it falls off the side, you'll get 20 points.
Oh, really?
Yes. So you're not. It's not about lowest strokes. It's about accumulating points.
Okay, so that's interesting.
Yeah, it is. And first I thought I wouldn't like it, but now it makes some sense, because every shot is a way possibly to score, and you're still trying to play it in the fewest number of strokes because you'll get more points that
right.
way. And the technology behind it, though, oh, my God, you want to see bells and whistles and colors and moving parts, and dear God in heaven. It's so I want to try it. I'm eager to try it. It's so busy, and I will say this, though. It was so busy.
How busy was it?
They were taking starting times, like a golf course, a real golf course. There's a TV screen, and you go sign up, and like you'll have a 1:42 tee time, and it'll
oh,
be
wow.
like 12:30.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Wow.
Pretty
okay.
Impressive. Yeah. So that was impressive. Is he talking to Mr. Piancardi?
I got to say, also, I want to give a shout-out to our friends Five Iron Golf downtown. Had a lot of fun there.
That's a great place, too.
Had some friends that visited over the weekend. They had a good time. Used the PGA ball tracking technology. Same stuff they use
on TV. You see it on TV.
Yep. So it's very highly, highly accurate. And they have a deceptively good menu. The food down there,
nice.
Pretty tasty,
very
gotta
good.
Say. And if you want, you can come say hi to me at Lulu. Two doors down. So,
we got
nice.
Paulie B on the phone number.
Oh,
phone
he's a patient.
Line. Uncle Paulie.
He's a patient man. Paul, I've been out of town for about 5 days and just saw my first ever space launch down at Cape Kennedy. Cape Canaveral. Didn't even know we were going to see it. And I had a bunch of tales to tell. So I talked right through your scheduled time. So you're much too patient with us. Thanks for agreeing to come on a little bit later. How are you?
I'm doing great. That sounds a lot more interesting than what I'm going to talk about.
No, I don't know about that, but it is interesting. We weren't planning on doing
yes.
it. We were just down there because a friend lives down there, and we were in the backyard getting ready to have a barbecue, and all of a sudden one of the guys looks up and says, what's that up there? And is it, you know, the vapor trail? And then all of a sudden we look on the other side of the cloud, and there's the rocket. It's going. And then
wow.
it got loud. You know, you see it before you hear it, because the difference in the speed of sound
right.
and the speed of light. And then the noise came in, and then two sonic booms, and we all almost, you know, wet our pants. Because we didn't know about any of this. Nobody. It's not like they drive around the neighborhood to warn you. So it was, it was pretty interesting, to say the least. So I take it you've never seen one?
I have not. No, never.
Well, I think you'd enjoy it, knowing you as I do. So. You'll have to make
well, I would enjoy it, and if you had some beverages while you were watching.
Oh yeah! Oh no, there certainly. Exciting. Oh, there was certainly some summer adult beverages there to be imbibed as we sat poolside.
That makes everything go faster.
Yeah, well, this thing did need to go a hell of a lot faster. It was going pretty fast. Oh man! All right, so tell me a little bit about what you're seeing in the draft field tonight. Deep draft, not so deep, stronger at certain positions. What's your impression of the NBA draft tonight?
Well, Bob, you know, you've been doing this for an awful long time, like I have, and you always hear about the draft. You hear about the top of the draft, right? The stars, the locks, who's going to be one, two, and three, and who's the franchise talent. It's not the case this year. It's just not the way it is. But I don't think it's a down draft, because to me, there's a lot of talent still in the draft. You just have to find it. You know, there's not a consensus, one, two, and three. Like last year, you had, you know, Victor Wembanyama, Brandon Miller, Scoot Henderson. You knew Victor was going to be one. You knew the other two guys were going to be 2-3 or 3-2. You know, it's like being at the track, putting down the trifecta, right? You just you put Victor on top, and you just wheel everybody else.
Did he?
You know what I'm talking about,
oh,
right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So in this draft, like this is like a superfecta. You just have no idea which four are going to be. But there's value and there's talent. You know, it's a solid draft in terms of talent, guys that can be starters. I don't see anybody today who's going to be an all-star, though you can predict maybe on who has a chance to be that. I think Stephen Castle has a chance to be that in the future. I don't see a franchise-changing talent, no. But, you know, you look at the Jalen Brunsons of the world, Josh Hart's of the world.
Yep.
There's a lot of those out there. And your scouting departments are going to earn their money in this draft, or they won't have a job next month, depending upon who they draft. And then your player development is going to be very important, because you're going to be taking guys that are, you know, a half, three quarters of an NBA player, and you're going to try to fill in the gaps, make them better, and then also try to make them great at what they're good at. So your player development is going to be big with these draft picks.
And speaking of draft picks, that's a perfect segue to what I wanted to get into next. There is an ongoing trend now in the league, and exemplified most recently by the New York Knicks, who are turning the Knicks franchise into Villanova North. They traded multiple draft picks. They had been diligently acquiring them. They shot the whole bunch of them in exchange for a crosstown rival player who hasn't made one All-Star game, but he's a former champion, Mikal Bridges. They traded the Nets, and they traded just incredible volume of draft picks. And as I'm reading this article that's delineating that trade, I'm seeing how often that's gone on lately. DeJounte Murray, Rudy Gobert, going back to Kevin Durant, the Cavaliers getting Donovan Mitchell, the Pacers getting Pascal Siakam, where they traded multiple picks, and the Knicks traded five first-round picks for this guy. Five! You never would have heard this years ago. How do you feel about this trend, Paul? Because there are people saying, well, the Knicks understand that window doesn't stay open forever, and that closes the gap on the Celtics. That's good for them. And there are others that say, you can't sustain if you just keep trading away your first-round draft picks. Where do you weigh in on it?
Well, you look what OKC has done, right? Sam Presti, I think he accumulated 18 picks over a five-year period, and now look at OKC. They're starting to come around.
Yeah, true.
They got Chet Holmgren. They got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And they got a bunch of guys that are going to help them, you know, win games next year, and they still have a couple of those 18 picks left. You know, I think if you're a franchise, you have to decide whether you want to win now or in the future. I think the worst place to be in the NBA is in the middle. You know, it's kind of like where the Charlotte Hornets have been. They've been at the bottom, and then they crawl to the middle, and they fall back to the bottom again. And I think the Nets were looking at, you know, how much more were they going to win with Bridges, but they can win more in the future.
Yep.
They found somebody who wanted him. They got great assets for it. And the Knicks know that window is open. They realize that they have to, you know, close the gap on the Celtics. Big wings, defensive-minded big wings, and big wings that can score. So I think both teams did what was best for their franchise. And now for the Knicks, it's a question of, will they, you know, re-sign OG and Anunoby, which I'm sure they will. I'm sure he's a priority. And then can they keep the big fella, Hartenstein? I'm not sure they can sign both, but I think OG and Anunoby is the priority now with Bridges. Then you look at that team with Julius Randle, you know, Williams in the middle, Brunson, Hart. They become a challenge for the Celtics.
You know what else, Paul, and I think it's fair to say, you know, some of these draft picks are, what, we're talking about like 2029. Nobody really even knows what the league's going to look like then. You know, I mean, so it's kind of like there's no time like the present, because on the one hand, right, you can't mortgage completely your future. But on the other, who knows what's going to look like then? And you know that this guy never misses games. He's always seemingly, knock wood, I'm not going to jinx him, he's always healthy.
Yeah.
He's a productive player. And they've got a good team right now. So why, you know, why would you? Why would you wait? Might as well strike while the iron's hot, as the cliche goes.
Yeah, and you know, playing for Tom Thibodeau when I was in college, being durable is very important. He wants everyday guys.
Yep.
And he has a team of that right now. And believe me, he was involved in this because he knows exactly who he wants to coach. And when you get guys that have durability, not worried about load management, and are really playing for the team and to win the game, it's a powerful thing. We saw it this year with the Knicks.
It is going to be interesting to see. I we always say that, and then it sometimes pans out. Sometimes it pans out even more than we thought. Sometimes it doesn't pan out at all. What I'm alluding to is, don't you think it'll be a really active night tonight? I think there's going to be lots of trades and retrades, and you know you're going to see teams drafting a player for another team which confuses the hell out of you when you're trying to cover the draft. So I could see that happening.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You know what this will be? One of the most exciting drafts.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting.
Right? Because when you know, like last year I mentioned you had Victor Wembanyama, you had Scoot Henderson, Brandon Miller, right? Then you knew the Thompson twins were going to get drafted soon after that. Like, you have no idea who's going to be three in this draft.
Mm-hmm.
This draft starts at one. You don't even know who's going to be number one.
True.
I equate it to the NCAA tournament when you fill out your brackets. And everybody says, okay, this game's, he's going to beat him, and they're going to beat them. And all of a sudden, after the first round, you got, five upsets. And I think that's what we're going to have tonight. We're going to have a lot of upsets. I don't think you can second-guess any of these picks because you really don't know. It's all based on the intel going in, obviously the evaluation of the games that were scouted live on film, but then the intel, the medical. This is a hard-working group. I will tell you this from the one-and-done kids, Bob, that were in the McDonald's game last year, for example, and the ESPN 100 guys that I know really well, a very, very hardworking group. Now, maybe because they knew they weren't as talented as classes before them, but at the McDonald's game, that's the one thing we picked up on in the practices. These guys were serious workers, and I think that's going to translate, when they get in the NBA. In fact, I know it will. And they'll end up being better players than people thought they would be.
Projected, ESPN's projected top 10 has four foreign players. That's probably absolutely unscientifically researched because we certainly have seen some great, great foreign players come to the draft. But whenever I see that many up high, it says to me they're not dazzlingly impressed by the overall crop of college players because they tend to reach a little bit with the foreign players. That's just my thought. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, and you take a look at the kid Alex Saar, people talking about him for one or two.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you this, a year ago, nobody had him in the lottery.
Yep, yeah.
Nobody.
That's a good point.
And nobody even knew he was an overtimer lead. And nobody even looked at him as a first-round pick. Now they're talking about as a top two pick.
Yeah, ESPN's got him as their number two.
Right.
So, yeah.
But I'm saying a year ago, nobody had him in a mock.
Yep, exactly.
A year ago this time, nobody had Reed Sheppard in the draft.
That's true also. And
this is the type of draft it is that, so when people have mock drafts, it's like it's based on what they see at the time. And, we had Reed Sheppard in the top 25 in the country. We thought he was very good. He was a McDonald's All-American. And then he went to Kentucky, and he kind of expedited his progress under Cal.
He actually did.
And now he's not only a first-round pick, he's a lottery pick, and some people are saying he's a top-three pick.
What do you make of this? I'm struck by this. Zach Edey's not going to New York. And I when a guy doesn't do that, it tells me he may be concerned he's not going to go high enough that he could put himself in an embarrassing position. You think that's possible?
It could be. I mean, I think the consensus, and there is no consensus, but I think the majority, I will say, people have him in the first round. It could be something where he's just, he's never been highly talked about until, the end of last year and then this year. He's made significant progress in his game, especially from last year to this year. I mean, he's a bona fide NBA center. Why he's not going, I don't know. Maybe he feels what you just said is that, could be disappointed where he gets drafted in terms of numbers. I mean, what if he doesn't go in the first round and he's there? Maybe he doesn't want to take that chance. But I think he's going to be a really solid NBA player. When I say solid, solid's a compliment.
Yes.
It's hard. It's almost impossible. It's almost impossible to be a solid NBA player. When you look at his size and his, I think it's 7'11 wingspan, close to 300 pounds, The touch got better. Great rebounder for, you know, for a guy who doesn't have a lot of lift. Defensive presence. But you know what I love about him? I think he can be a heck of a screener. Like, I think he is going to get guys open and get what they call a screen assist. And think about this concept, Bob. How about him setting a ball screen, turning around, and then rescreening that guy? I wouldn't want to get hit twice by Zach.
Yeah. Oh, man. You'd be wearing guys. It's like a football team that has a great ground game. In the fourth quarter, you're just exhausted. You can't. That poor point guard, by the end of the night, would be battered and bruised. He could be a Waffle House home fry. Battered, bruised.
Smothered, covered, chunked, and diced. Yeah.
Bleeding, hemorrhaging. There you go. You know, I did want to ask you about that. Edie 7-4. Donovan Klingon is 7-3. They are talked about in terms of throwback players, old school low post players of the NBA from 30 years ago. Is that a compliment, an insult, or just an observation?
I think it's just the way it is. I mean, the game's changed. So when, you know, you and I were probably watching NBA games as adults, as coaches, they had a two-post offense, right? Double low post offense.
Oh, yeah.
You throw it inside to one, and the other guy was already on the block or he was at the foul line. You know, now it's four out and sometimes five out. And with the four out, one in, that one guy who's in isn't always a center. It's the best post player. Bigs have started to shoot the ball more and more over the last decade. So I just think it's who they are. But, you know, I see great value still. I mean, you tell me, you watch all these NBA games. You need somebody to defend against Joel Embiid. You need somebody to defend against Jokic, right? Now, the Celtics didn't have a center, and they won it, but they had elite wings. And that's why they won the championship. Plus, they had a guy who I thought was a stud defender in Holiday. But I think you have to have that center, at least on the defensive end, and then a center who can just screen and roll to the basket and catch lobs. And Edie can do both of those things.
I got to ask you about this guy. Highly discussed. What happens with Bronny James, do you think? Does it impact LeBron? And he only worked out for two teams, my understanding is. I think he worked out for the Lakers and the Suns. Does that mean he knows something that nobody else does? Or what do you make of that? Where are his prospects lying?
Well, first of all, I would have loved to see Bronny James go back to college. I think he would have been a better NBA prospect if he did that. I watched him since he was a freshman in high school. And he got incrementally better each year in high school, and he worked himself up to a top 25 high school prospect in the class. I mean, that is in the elite 1% of the entire class. You know, played well in the McDonald's game, got voted in as a McDonald's All-American, but then he had to hit the reset button. Go to USC, and obviously had the heart condition early, and that set him back both physically and mentally. And then by the time he started playing, the team wasn't doing well. It was kind of a dysfunctional season at USC, and Bronny really never got in a groove there. And his numbers don't say he should be drafted, but I know that he is a very good on-ball defender. He's a good playmaker. He can really see the pass and make the pass. And he's becoming a better shooter. He can catch and shoot. Now, can he do it at the NBA level, all those things? Almost. He'll get drafted, I believe, by the Lakers, like most people believe, and LeBron will have his opportunity to be on the court with his son. He'll need to go down to the G League to get a lot of reps. But if he went back to college, he would have made himself a better NBA prospect.
I got to ask you about this guy. You know, and the listeners will know, I've said this so many times that probably ad nauseum, but I openly admit when I'm wrong about guys. I'm right about guys occasionally. And I was wrong about Trae Young. I just didn't think he would pan out in the NBA. I thought they just let him go do basically Lon Kruger kind of gave him carte blanche in college. I said, we're not going to do that in the NBA. Well, yes, they did. So he's been good. But I have been right about some other guys as well. The guard from Kentucky that's playing with the Suns, who's turned
Dillingham.
Into a star. No, the guy who's already in the league.
Devin Booker.
I saw Booker. He wasn't even starting at Kentucky. And I said, that kid's going to be a stud in the NBA. And I was right about that. Yep. But you know where I'm going, because the guy I think is going to be a stud is Dillingham. having seen him early at the Champions Classic, I said from then, I've said this kid is going, I don't know, you know, I saw him only periodically during the year, but I think he's going to be a really, really good NBA player. What's your prospectus?
I agree 100%. Everyone has him as a dynamic shot creator, and he is. He can create his own shot with the best of them. When he went from high school to college, when he committed to Kentucky, I said on TV, he's the best one-on-one bucket coming into the college game. I think he showed that. The three-point shot, the floater, you know, he averaged close to, I believe, 4 assists at Kentucky. Came off the bench.
Yep.
You look at him, 6'1", 165 pounds, you go, eh. And then you get on the court with him, and you can't catch him because he's got a burst of speed, and he also has a change of direction and a shiftiness where, like, you think he's going right, and he goes left. So he's a perfect NBA offensive player. But I think his value, Bob, comes into the fact that I think he can play a secondary point guard role. I really do. You know, 10, 12 minutes a game with the second unit. So now you have him as a point guard. With the second unit, you have him maybe as a starting guard, a scoring guard with the first unit. So I think he has great upside in this draft.
You know, speaking of great upside in the draft and Kentucky players in the draft, Kentucky now will have a player drafted in the first round, assuming, you know, one of those guys we talked about gets drafted, and they both will be, probably. There'll be 14 straight drafts, which is the longest streak that's gone on in the modern era. Do you think Cal can duplicate that at Arkansas, that kind of presence in the draft with the way the game has changed and at a new, you know, Arkansas is a fine program, but it's not got the history Kentucky's had. So how do you think it plays out?
Yes, he can. I mean, just think about what he did in 3 short months in terms of putting a roster together. Mm-hmm. Some high-profile high school kids along with some excellent transfers. John Calipari has always been a great recruiter, a great evaluator of talent, knows what he wants in his program. So I think Arkansas is going to have that same level of NBA prospects coming out of their program. Now, to the same degree that he had at Kentucky, I don't know, because when he got to Kentucky, you know, he's kind of the godfather of the one-and-dones,
right?
He's the one who started it, and then everybody followed him. And when he did it, there was nobody better and nobody hotter. And, you know, then everybody followed suit. But, you know, the Kansas of the world, the North Carolinas, they're still producing one-and-done type players. And I think John at Arkansas will do the same.
It's going to be fun. Where are you just home or where are you? Are you going to be in New York or what's going on with you?
No, I'm doing radio for ESPN Charlotte tonight, covering the Hornets in the draft.
Oh, nice. Where are they? Where are they picking?
They pick 6.
What's the buzz, as they said in Jesus Christ Superstar? What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening with Charlotte. Where do you think they're leaning?
You want to know the Hornets buzz?
Yep. Hey, very good.
You like that? Well, look, you're at 6. You've got to swing for the fence. Whatever's on the board, whatever your scouting department says, hey, this is the most talented guy left. Number one, I think that's what you got to do at 6. I don't think you draft safe at 6.
Mm.
There's some rumors that they're trying to trade up a little bit to get Reed Shepard, which would be outstanding. Rob Dillingham is in the play at 6. You know, play next to LaMelo Ball and Brandon Miller. Now you can score points, and that takes pressure off of LaMelo Ball and Brandon Miller on the offensive end. And also, Stephen Castle could be there, and he brings a dynamic defender. I mean, he's an excellent defender, and he's a penetrator. He's kind of a Swiss Army knife who can play a backup point guard as well. I think when you look at Shepard, Dillingham, and Castle, they all could be a second unit, 5-10 minutes a game as a point guard, so LaMelo Ball can rest.
Why did the G League Ignite team disband, by the way?
Wasn't successful.
In what capacity? Not making money? I mean, because they've been cranking out draft picks. So what?
Yeah, I don't think it was. I don't believe it was a money issue. I believe that, you know, they weren't getting the type of talent that they thought they were going to get. I mean, this was supposed to be 5 first-round picks every year.
Yep.
And then it was one. Jalen Green was their best recruit, obviously. And then you know, there was supposed to be 5 first-round picks, and then it got to be 4 and then 2, and guys were in the second round, guys weren't getting drafted, and that wasn't the premise of the league. Overtime elite came into the picture, and now you have NIL. Guys aren't looking to leave college anymore. They're looking to stay.
Yeah, I was going to say NIL is the whole landscape changer. I mean, those guys will be making more in college than if they left college. So,
well, they're making as much as, if not more, like you mentioned, staying in college than going to the G League. Certainly they're making the same or more than going overseas. So the NIL has been a game changer. It's keeping college players in college. So I don't think the G League Ignite was as successful as it was, say, you know, 5-7 years ago.
You are the best. Thank you for your patience with us today. Have fun on the radio in Charlotte, and you take care of yourself. And go down to Florida and see a launch. You'll like it. Very cool.
All right. I'll think about that next.
All right, brother. Take care of yourself. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right, Paul. Very nice. Paul Biancardi. NBA draft night. Interesting. Interesting draft tonight. It is interesting because I think there's going to be a lot of movement going on. I think that philosophy, and you're seeing it more and more. When you see it once, you say, oh, okay. See it twice, you say, oh, maybe they're on something. Then you see it as many times as you have. You got a trend going now, which is, you know, it used to be get draft picks, use them all, and then look 5 years down the road. Now it's get a million draft picks and trade them all. Trade them all, bundle them together, and get two pieces to your puzzle that you need.
There's no value to them anymore.
Well, they're always a bit of a crapshoot. And as I said, you don't know what the league's going to look like a few years down the road. So if you got a chance to win, and the Knicks were good this year. You know, if the Knicks, and if they can keep everybody together, OG Anunoby, who I think they are going to sign, and, you know, if Randall, I guess, comes back healthy, and they have got it. This will be if they traded for him, they'll have Bridges. They'll have 4 Villanova players.
Yeah, that's wild.
It's unbelievable. It's like Jay Wright. They should put on the payroll. Hell, he should.
Brunson, Hart, Archie Diacono, and Mikal Bridges.
I'm just imagining they start out like, let's think, like the Bucks fired Adrian Griffith when they were in first place in the East. Like Tibbs gets fired, they're third in the East. Why? Oh, we just need to bring in another coach. Jay Wright just starts walking through the door. Oh, okay. I get it now. Okay.
I don't think that would happen. I think Jay Wright will beat a lot of games, though. But I don't think he's coming back to the sideline. So, do we have the NBA draft on our airwaves, correct?
We do have the NBA draft on our airwaves. How far are you into that that bag of Bucky's?
Still above the label.
Okay, all right. So, all right, go. You're pacing yourself then. You're pacing yourself.
Yeah. They are extremely delicious, though.
Aren't they? They're fantastic. NBA draft coverage delivered by Barno's Pizza. Thompson Brothers Plumbing, now hiring licensed and unlicensed plumbers. ThompsonBrosPlumbing.com. We'll have that draft 7 p.m. on ESPN 680, 105.7, and 93.9, The Ville.
And then round 2's tomorrow, right?
Round 2's tomorrow at 4 p.m.
I don't get that.
Well, we were talking about it yesterday. I mean, Lightsey brought up a good point, talking about how, I mean, it comes down to, you know, media deals, yeah, and they need content and everything, and so they're stretching it out over 2 days.
Me and Aiden were talking about it, though, in the back before we started. We're like, out of all leagues that split up a draft in between, like, 2 days or more than one day, the NBA is the last league to do it. Like, NHL makes sense. There's, like, seven rounds.
There's only 2 rounds.
7 rounds. Yeah. NFL, 7 rounds. MLBs, there's like
15 or whatever.
Like, I don't even know.
Well, in fairness, those things make sense. The NBA doing drafts as many rounds as they did in the past were ridiculous. Do you know Larry Brown, when he was at Kansas, I think, or might have been UCLA, used his last draft pick, because right after that he went to the NBA. He drafted his manager just as a
joke.
Yeah, just as a thank you, so that the kid could tell people he was drafting. So they had no value. Plus, the players were restricted more by that because you got drafted. Even though there's very little chance you could make the team, you could only deal with that team. Now, there's 2 teams and everybody else is a free agent. You go where you want to go.
Right.
Baseball has to have a million rounds because they're not just stocking one team. They're stocking 4 teams.
Yeah, their minor
league
system.
Their major league team, their triple A team, their double A team, and their single A team, basically.
Right.
So you got to have all those rounds. The NFL draft is multiple days just because of business.
There's so many positions.
No, because people lose their minds.
Also, I mean, I feel like the logistics of it, too. There's so many.
You can do the same thing. You can sign free agents and guys. It's about, it's though, the, you know,
They people lose their mind over the NFL draft. And I love all these sports, but like I said, I don't. Why would you want to go to Vegas to watch guys walk up and put a hat on? Go to Lids, you see it for free.
Because it is the draft. We Want to Know Wednesday. I have a really funny story. Have you guys heard about the 1974 NHL draft? And I don't know what round it was, but pick 183 comes up, and Buffalo is on the board. And it's boring. It's boring as all hell, and surprisingly, their GM's name is Punch Imlach.
Yeah.
He
legendary coach. See, that's unbelievable. Hockey guys. You don't know freaking Punch Imlach.
He
was the head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs when they were dominant. He was their head man who was leading them to Stanley Cup after Stanley Cup after Stanley Cup.
Oh, anywho.
I've never heard of Punch Imlach.
He was so bored.
Sorry.
And he goes, all right, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to draft this Japanese player, Taro Sumimoto. The only problem is Sumimoto is not real.
He made it up. That's
cool. And he came from the Tokyo Katanas of the Japanese Ice Hockey League.
He made that up, too?
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Was inspired by Japanese-American Joshua Tumizato, who owned a grocery store that... director of communications for the Sabres, Paul Wieland, would regularly drive by.
That's impressive.
It's the best story.
There's a story like that, which is equally entertaining, I think.
Is this the one about the Heisman guy?
Yeah, the college football player. This guy was reading, as we used to do back when newspapers were the thing, the Sunday paper, and he looked at all of these games, you know, college football scores, and they were all in agate type, you know, Slippery Rock versus Edinburgh. And he would say, who are all these schools? So he decided just to see if he could get a score in there. So he made a team up. I don't remember what the name of it is, but he made a school up. He called the AP. So I got a college football score for you. It's okay. Guys, you know, it's weekend. The phones are ringing. The guys, yeah, what do you got? Harris Tech, 35, and Loudoun, 28. Okay, great. And he looks at the next paper. There it is, Harris Tech. So he's like, this is awesome. So he calls the next week, and he gives him another score. And he gets in again. So now he gets bold. And he said the third week, Harris Tech, 45, Johnson State, nothing. Oh, and by the way, I think you might want to know, Thomas Livingston had 4 touchdowns in this game. So he gets in, and he's all right, calls back the next week. You know, Harris Tech, 52, Thomas Livingston had 5 touchdowns this week. So now he gets a little blurb. You know, Harris Tech ran their winning streak to 4, and Harris Livingston got whatever, Thomas Livingston got 5 touchdowns. He did that through the whole end of the year, and it... school never existed, never played a game. There's nothing valid to it at all. And at the end of the year, Thomas Livingston got Heisman votes. this pretend player got Heisman votes from some people. So
that's
I don't think you could do that anymore with the internet.
So no, I don't think you could. But that's an awesome story.
That's pretty good, the Punch Imlach story. I like that. I learned this over the weekend. This is for Perfectly Wanted Wednesday. If you love the whale penis one, you'll dig this.
Oh, sweet. Genitalia.
The guy, again, I think it's okay for kids. The guys who did Airplane, they were collaborated on a book, and it's fantastic. They interviewed all the people involved with it, the actors who are still alive, obviously, and told stories. But the three of them are unbelievably entertaining. But the struggle they had, three kids from Milwaukee met at University of Wisconsin and followed this dream, put together this very, very unlikely path to make this what everybody regards as a comedy classic.
Right.
But they talk about their struggle. And they had, like everybody else who's trying to make it, you have to pay the bills. So they had odd jobs that they had to try to do to tide them over as they were pursuing this. One guy, I forget which one of the three it is, it's irrelevant to the story, somebody got him a job as for a funeral home, I guess a mortuary, right? He was in charge of helping prepare the cadavers for funeral service.
Right.
He said, as he learned, that, you know, when you hear them embalming a body, the way you do it is you have to go into the femoral artery and you put embalming fluid in, pumps in through the femoral artery, and then it eventually goes through the whole body and makes it
so that the body is preserved.
Right.
Okay. Well, it takes a while. It's not like you push a button and whoop, it kind of, you know, kind of goes in just gradually. So he and the guy put the pump in, and they, I don't know how long it takes. I don't know what the answer is, but whatever it is, let's say for the sake of argument, it's 40 minutes. They said, let's go grab a sandwich and we'll come back.
Uh-oh.
So they went to the cafeteria, and he said either we lost track of the time or it took a long time to get the sandwich. They were in there longer than they thought. And to make it worse, I'm sorry, I love this story. They didn't check.
I think I know where this is going.
They didn't check, and the pump ran out of fluid. So now, for the rest of the time, all it did was pump air in there.
Oh, no.
So he said, we got back to the room, and the guy was sitting up, he said, with an erection that would have made him a legend.
All around the world.
So John Holmes died?
Oh, that must have got their attention. You walk in, and the guy's sitting straight up and swing. That's a We Want to Know Wednesday right there.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's wild.
Quality entertainment there.
So that's way better than mine. Mine involved Tony Gwynn.
Tony Quinn?
Tony Gwynn.
Oh, Tony Gwynn, the baseball player?
Yeah.
Oh, what's his?
It was Tony Gwynn faced Greg Maddux, Pedro Martinez, Tom Glavin, and John Smoltz a combined 323 times.
Never struck out.
Struck out three times.
Wow. That's a good stat.
Tony, like, I've been seeing a lot of Tony Gwynn stats. Like the internet does this. They'll find, like, an athlete, and they just turn them into, like, wow, you know who was really good, and we didn't realize how good they were? Like, they did it with Larry Bird for a while. And, like, the stories that would, like, come out of him, like, you know, talking smack and playing with his left hand and everything like that, they started coming out. Tony Gwynn now is, like, one of the major ones for baseball.
Okay.
So I've just been seeing tons and tons of Tony Gwynn stats. I always remember Tony Gwynn. He was one of my favorite players growing up because he was the one that they would use for the crack of the bat is the heart of the game for the Louisville Slugger Museum. If you went to school here in Southern Indiana or Louisville, Kentucky, you went and did like a yearly tour of the Louisville Slugger Museum as a field trip. It was awesome. It was great. Don't get me wrong. But they had the same video for, like, I mean, seriously, I think they just changed it, like, 5 years ago. Something like that. And it was Tony Gwynn, and he was narrating, like,
oh, I do remember that.
Yeah. So, yeah. I always had a soft spot for Tony Gwynn.
Oh, he could hit. The one stat that blows your mind.
That he had less strikeouts in his career than Shohei Ohtani had last season?
Well, there's one like that. I could look it up, but... Give you a chance to do something on your own. Joe DiMaggio hit the 369 home runs, one of the great power sluggers of all time. Lost a lot of home runs by going in the service. He was
right,
in the service
right.
Well, his total strikeouts for his career was less than Reggie Jackson's for one season.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Let me see if I can get you those numbers. Joe DiMaggio's strikeouts per season. In his average, DiMaggio struck out on average in a 162-game season 34 times.
Wow. That's wild.
That's unbelievable. I mean, that is astounding. Let's go take a look at what his total career strikeouts were. He striked out for his entire career 369 times in 13 years.
Wow.
369 times. I'm pretty sure Reggie Jackson struck out more than that.
In one season?
In one season. I'm almost sure. See if I can find that for you here. Yep, here it is. Reggie Jackson struck out. Well, no, he struck out. In his career, he struck out 2,597 times.
Wow.
Joe DiMaggio struck out 363, but his high was 171. Struck out 171 times in 1 year.
I got a good one. I just looked it up.
Okay.
Don Mattingly. Played from 82 to 95.
Right.
82, he had zero grand slams. 83, he had zero grand slams. 84, zero grand slams. 85, zero grand slams. 86, zero grand slams. 87, six grand slams. MLB single season record. And for the rest of his career, zero more.
So he had six in 1 year and none in any of the other years. That is bizarre.
Six in 1 year and none in the rest of
his career.
I
learned something today, which I didn't know. Being a baseball fan, I appreciate this. A little before my time. The Kansas City Athletics, before they moved to Oakland, were owned by a very colorful, interesting owner, Charles Finley. Mm-hmm. And he bought them and then moved them to Oakland. And he got mad at the Yankees, because everybody got mad at the Yankees. That's what you did. And so he had a baseball stadium in Kansas City that was kind of, you know, average dimensions.
Okay.
You got to go look a picture of this up. Go look up the Kansas City Athletics pennant porch. That's what he called it. He took the permanent right field stands, and then he put a temporary fence in front of it so that it would recreate how far it was down the line at Yankee Stadium. And he had some people sitting. He had seats put in between that temporary fence he put in and what was the real fence. And he's just trying to show the world that all these Yankee numbers, this Yankee power,
right,
this Yankee stuff was because. And then he would tell. So baseball made him take it out. Baseball made him take the fence down. So he had to take
so
the fence down.
So he's trolling the Yankees.
So then he would spray paint a white line there where it used to be. And whenever a guy hit a fly ball that was caught behind the line, he instructed his announcers to say, oh, that would have been a home run in Yankee Stadium.
What a troll job.
That's pretty good trolling.
That is pretty good trolling.
It's quality trolling.
This was the fact I saw. Tony Gwynn struck out 188 times in the 90s. Okay. Shohei Ohtani struck out 189 times just last season.
Yeah, okay. 189, wow.
I got a good one now. You guys remember Jamie Moyer?
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
By the way, you know who his father-in-law is? You know Jamie Moyer's father-in-law is?
Who?
Digger Phelps.
Ah, how about that?
Jamie Moyer faced 8.9% of all major league hitters ever.
What percentage?
8.9%.
That's incredible.
I know he pitched forever.
Well,
I
know he struck out Ted Williams once. I did know that. Wow.
8.9%. That's crazy.
I got another one. Joe Theismann was Washington's leading punt returner in 74.
Wow. Where are you finding all these? Just the internet?
I just looked up wildest sports stats because I was like, there's got to be some that I don't even know. And yeah. If you took away Hank Aaron's 755 career home runs, he would still have over 3,000 hits and still rank top 30 all-time in hits.
Wow.
The stat that I used to like is if you take how many times Mickey Mantle struck out and how many times he walked, and if you assume that he would get up, I don't know, 500 times a season, if you take the total number of strikeouts, I could look it up, but you'll get the gist of it. The total number of times he struck out and total number of times he walked in his career. And you figure that an average a number of that bats a year is like 500. It meant I think he went 3 full seasons without ever hitting the ball.
Wow, really? No, there's a great video. I can't remember. I don't think it's John Boy Media. I can't remember who does it, but they do a stat. They said, like, in like the prime Barry Bonds years, he was the most efficient hitter in the MLB without swinging a bat because he got walked so many times. Like it's stupid.
Yeah.
They break it down. They're like, he was one of the leading, like, you know, players in the league without ever swinging a bat. This is a good stat I got here from our man Super 70 Sports,
okay,
Ricky Cobb. Wayne Gretzky stat. He's the NHL's career leader in goals, and if you take away all 894 of them, he's still the league's all-time scoring leader.
Wow.
That's how many assists he had.
If you took the feet distance of Mark McGwire's 70 home runs in 1988, you'd have well over enough to fly over Mount Everest.
Oh, wow, really?
You wonder how good Babe Ruth was.
How great was he, Bob?
Babe Ruth, you talk about records that'll never be broken. Babe Ruth scored 177 runs in 1921. And stat holders will argue that runs scored is maybe among the most valuable statistics to gauge a player. We always talk about that, other things. But he scored 177 runs in 1921, which is considered the modern era record for runs scored in a season. Over 100 years ago. A record from 100 years ago still stands.
Wow. Wow.
But Billy Hamilton, not the Reds Billy Hamilton, a guy who played in the 1800s, has a ridiculous number of runs scored, but they don't attribute it. He had 198, but they say that
the record keeping was so spotty. It's difficult to
tell.
That's
a shame.
But Babe Ruth with the modern era record. Modern era in baseball is modern era, is defined as since 1900.
Right.
177 runs. It's a record that has stood for 103 years.
I wonder who came closest to it.
That's a good question.
That'd be interesting.
NHL overtime was eliminated during World War II because there were restrictions on train travel, so they couldn't risk going long and missing the one and only train that night. It was only reinstated in 83-84.
Wow.
We didn't have to worry about the trains anymore. The next closest number of runs, Babe Ruth had 177. Lou Gehrig in 1936 scored 167. Lou Gehrig again in 1931 had 163. I'm trying to find anybody. Here we go. Chuck Klein, I think played for Philadelphia, scored 158 in 1930. I'm trying to find a guy on this list that you would remotely know from today. Here we go. You want to know who the modern guy is that is on this list? Jeff Bagwell is 30th. He scored 152 in 2000.
Okay,
so he's the modern, but the other ones, DiMaggio, Jimmy Fox, Babe Ruth.
Any other ones showing up?
Is one
the 20s?
Ronald Acuna.
There we go.
Is 47th on the list. So in the top 50, the only guys who are on this list later than 19 what? What would you like me to use the cutoff? 19
when Jamie was born, 95.
Okay, well, Jeff Bagwell, I told you, is on there. He is tied for 30th with 152. Ronald Acuna, last year, scored 149. That's put him in a tie for 47th. They may be the only ones since the 1980s. In fact, they're the only ones since 1950.
Jeez.
I wonder why that is. You would think that baseball was lower scoring game back in the day.
Yeah, really.
I guess it wasn't. Either that they didn't play as many games. I mean, all these names are old baseball names. 1800s, early 1900s. Craig Biggio in 1997 is tied for 61st. Ricky Henderson is also tied for 61st in 1985. Then we keep scrolling down, and you're getting names like Ty Cobb and Hugh Duffy, Charlie Gehringer, Al Simmons. There's nobody. Alex Rodriguez, there we go. In 2007, scored 143. Yeah, very interesting. But I don't care. That's a record that's 100 and some odd years old, Babe Ruth. And from 1900... That's a record. He did it in 1920. It's 103 years old. Nobody's gotten that close.
Really?
Nobody's gotten close to it. Amazing. All right, we'll take a break. Stay with us. ESPN 680 105.7.
Taking care of your family isn't always easy, so we make sure getting care when you need it is. With Baptist Health Urgent and Virtual Care, we bring you more options and greater convenience, too. With video visits available 24/7 and online check-in through MyChart for in-person visits. To check in online or to set up a video visit, go to baptisthealth.com/careanywhere.
When it's time to replace your heating and air system, we know people want options. That's why you'll always get a free second opinion with BJ Heating and Cooling. Plus, for a limited time, get 0% financing for 60 months on a new Bryant system.
Call the experts you can trust at BJ Heating and Cooling.